720 WGN. It is Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue on the 4th of July. And the city, the suburbs, everybody is super excited. It's kind of weird to have it. I don't know if it's weird to have it on a Monday, but at least it's not on a Saturday or Sunday where you feel like you've been kind of, you know, ripped off as far as getting that extra day off. But we're going to have a great show today. Big thanks to Elise for doing the business lunch. And so on today's show, we're going to have Chef Mike Harris. He's actually in studio. Mike, go ahead and say hi.
Hello, world. How are we all doing today? Excellent, excellent. I don't know who I'm asking. There's literally nobody in the room other than Dane, but that's okay.
Well, Shane is in the booth. He's going to be spinning the hits and, of course, keeping us connected with you as well. 312-981-7200. If you've got any thoughts on what you're doing for 4th of July, here's the suggestions. I know people are going to be, you know, we want to say safety with fireworks. That's good. People are going to be in the backyard grilling, going to be with friends and family opening, maybe having a cocktail or two, maybe a beer. Who knows? Whatever you're doing, you can go ahead and share it with us. 312-981-7200. You can text in, you can call in, and you can do that throughout the program until 3. So Chef Mike Harris, he is the manager of culinary innovation for McDonald's. Yes, that one. The big McDonald's, because we are going to touch on, and of course you can add your own and kind of send in the ones that you think so too, but as far as things that are all American, things that are, you know, just say America, whether it's a corporate identity, an iconic brand, something to do, yeah, we're going to be talking about some of those things for America. I can't think of another brand out there that is more right, wrong, indifferent, you know, whether you're a health nut or whether you're just a historian of brands and food, than McDonald's.
I would agree. I mean, we've been part of the culture for many, many years. It's one of the most recognizable brands out there. So it's definitely an honor to even be working for McDonald's.
Yeah, right. And those ties not only to America, the beautiful on the 4th of July, but the Chicagoland area. So we're going to talk with Mike a little bit later on in the program, right after this first break for sure. We're also going to be talking with Rohini Day from Vermilion. She is an award-winning restaurateur, one of Chicago's 50 most beautiful people. And she is with the James Beard Foundation. She's going to be talking about their Women in Culinary awards program and the grant program that they've got coming up, so stay tuned for that. Bob Carlini is going to be calling in. He is the president of the American Blueberry Council, located in Michigan, but of course his responsibilities are nationwide. Ray Forgione is going to be calling in from the Kenosha Harbor Market. Have you ever been up to the...
I have not, but I need to put that on my calendar of things to do.
It is all the things that you would know, love, and want and desire from either like a street festival or from a farmer's market. It does have a certain amount of crafts and things like that, but a really, you know, credible produce and farmer's market side as well. So we'll be talking with him. And then coming up a little bit later, we are going to have he's from his Hollywood headquarters. Blake Stubbs is going to talk summer blockbusters. So, I mean, everyone's going to be in the backyard today, but the 4th of July kind of is one of those days that I know I got begged to go. Let's go to the movies. Let's go see Finding Dory or whatever. So you want to know where to put your cinematic dollars. Blake is going to check in with us a little bit later on in the program as well. So stay tuned for all that. Plus Mike Harris when we come back. It's Dane on 720 WGN. WGN, Dane Neal in Allstate Showcase Studio, in for Bill and Wendy, and I'll actually be in with Bill, I don't want to say all day tomorrow, but it's a pretty extended day, so from 10, that's first 2 hours, then there's that break for the business lunch, and then from 1 till 3 again as well. It's always fun. Last time I got a chance to sit in with Bill, we had a great time, and the only thing that would have made it even better would be some McDonald's french fries. In studio with us, we do have Mike Harris. He's the manager of culinary innovation for the one and only McDonald's Corporation, with responsibilities that are for the American menu. Is it north? Is it all North Canada too?
Mainly U.S. menu, but you know, we have a global team that also works around the globe, coming up with cool ideas all over the world.
I think of McDonald's and the global team that doing the air quotes. I think kind of like the Avengers, right? You got like this red and yellow helicopter.
You call them in, they parachute in, you know, in case you need to get something done real quick. They just show up and get it done.
More special sauce.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. So when it comes to the menus, and we were talking a little bit about it during the break, but there are things that are on the menu, have been on the menu for 30, 40 years, whether it's your quarter pounder, whether it's the Big Mac, course, the fries of the signature kind of item over there at McDonald's. But then you guys are always kind of pushing the envelope, trying to stay up with trends and things that are going on, or kind of give people additional choices, reasons to show up and enjoy what it is that you guys are doing, whether it's the healthy menus or some of the yogurts or the fruit parfaits and things like that. So how does that happen? Is it a giant conference room and you're like, we need more of this, or hey, this is hot right now, let's incorporate it?
Well, definitely more recent, we're really engaged with our customers. So all day breakfast, for instance, that was one of the most requested things by our customers, what they wanted on our menu. So that is something that we're trying to do more of, to make sure that we are responding to our customers' needs and putting them first. You spoke before about some of those iconic items, so that's from our core menu. So Chicken McNuggets, the Big Mac, the Quarter Pounder, those are going to be with us forever and ever.
Does anyone ever suggest, hey, you know, they had a nice run, Chicken McNuggets. Let's, you know, and then they're like, you need to leave the room. I mean, is there anybody who kind of busts the system?
We sell so many, and so many people want it, that I don't think it's going to go anywhere ever. It has been difficult to make changes to some of those iconic things. So if you change the sauce on the Big Mac, is it still the same Big Mac or you know, something like that? But like I was saying, as of late, and I've only been with McDonald's for about a year now, but even in my time here, the innovation process, what McDonald's is going to do, the changes to the menu, it's all, I wouldn't say fair game, but they are now looking at alternate versions of some of those core items.
Well, it's cool. It is cool to see that there's that kind of, you know, responsiveness where you are trying to be more things to more people that have been fans of the brand for such a long time. And we'll get into some of those regional things. And for those fans out there or people who go to McDonald's that, you know, want to know when the McRib is going to show up or in different parts of the country. And of course, WGN reaches a pretty good section of the Midwest. If you've got different regional items that are maybe at your McDonald's or ones that you've experienced on vacation, you can definitely text in or call in 312-981-7200 as well. And we're going to touch it on some of those because those are kind of cool things. People look forward to it. You know, the advertisements comes out. This is coming. You know, the McRib is back. It's crazy popular. I'm not a huge McRib eater myself, but I know that people do love it. But
quite all right.
But let's talk.
Right.
This was huge news. This was huge, you know, national, global news when McDonald's, you know, started working in that breakfast to be more things available, maybe not the entire menu, but some of those staple things available throughout the course of the day. And so many, and we talked about it again, you know, either last night or during the break or in the green room, is that people, and I've been there myself, where it's like 1 minute after 10:30, and you think, like, geez, why can't we just, you know, have some hotcakes and sausage now? But it just doesn't work that way. So when you decided to do it, people have been calling for it for years, but you decided to go ahead and, you know, let's make breakfast available. What was involved in that?
Sure. And I'll explain the difficulty of executing an all-day breakfast this way. So imagine you have a single-family home. All your kids have their own room. You and your significant other have their own room. Everything's set. Everything is great. Now let's say, hey, I want a whole nother family to move in there and get it all set up. How do you handle that? So there's a lot of working parts where the great thing about McDonald's is everything's compartmentalized. We have everything down timing-wise, you know, cooking things to make sure it's as fresh as possible. All that is developed ahead of time. So then when you switch from breakfast to lunch, some of that equipment gets flipped over to execute lunch stuff. So where you were making, you know, fresh-made eggs for the Egg McMuffin, that same platen you got to use to make beef. So how do we fit all-day breakfast in while still executing lunch and dinner items? So very difficult to execute, but through the work that the team has done to appropriately make everything for everybody, that's why in certain regions there's a certain all-day breakfast allowed. There is some future work in all-day breakfast, so we'll see what comes with that. But yeah, it was very difficult to get done, but I think we did a great job, you know, making sure that people are getting what they want.
Challenges aside on the execution, the logistics, the moving parts, as far as, you know, from a successful standpoint, as far as from the customer side and the sales or the supply and demand. So how's it been going?
It has been going fantastic. I mean, especially with something such high in demand and finally being able to deliver what your
customers
want.
Instead of no, sorry.
Right, like, sorry, yeah, maybe at 10:30 you could come get it, but yeah. Me personally, being able to give the customers what they want is the best part of the job. It's going into a restaurant and seeing somebody enjoy an Egg McMuffin at, you know, 5 p.m. And seeing them enjoy it is pretty awesome. And especially the scope of it, knowing that you're feeding millions and millions of people on a daily basis is pretty awesome.
Well, here's the thing, and part of the reason that McDonald's has been so successful for so long, and we have to remind people, not that maybe I'm sure a lot of people do know this, but remind that it is a franchise. Mm-hmm. That these are owner operators that are owning their own McDonald's franchise, and so there's a lot of autonomy in what it is that they do and how they do it. And I'm sure there's a ton of support on the corporate side, but it isn't as though McDonald's can just say like, and this is what we're doing, because there's a lot of things that are done differently. But that's part of what has made as a franchise McDonald's so successful, is that it really works. And when you say those moving parts are tight, everything is accounted for and organized, it really is. So when you do make a change like this, it's something that you really have to think through.
Absolutely, and especially with the owner-operators. So with our franchise model, those owner-operators have a say in what they want to sell. So I could come up with the next big thing and say, this is awesome, this is going to sell. If our owner-operators are, no, my customers are not going to want that.
How do you do that? And Mike, you're a very bright guy. You're an intuitive guy. You're here in the Midwest, and so I think you get, and this is Chicagoland is a super diverse place with a lot of different cuisines and cultures. And so I think you get, but how do you do that? How do you know what is going to play well in different parts of the country?
Obviously we start off at McDonald's with chefs. We have a 6 or 7 awesome chefs who work for McDonald's, and dozens of supplier chefs support from companies that we buy from. Everything we do starts with chefs in a kitchen, which is another thing that I don't know if all our consumers understand, that I've got a certified master chef who assists us doing things with the American Culinary Federation.
Nice.
We have talented chefs that come up with stuff. We do very strict testing, consumer testing panels. We do regional evaluations to know what regions' flavor profiles are, which is why now we are breaking down our country into regions where we can have those limited time offers. Let's say on the East Coast, we're doing the lobster roll. On the West Coast,
I think the Midwest would like a lobster roll as well.
I think we can bring it in here. There's also some other challenges with that, with McDonald's being how large they are. Right. There's certain times when it's like, oh yeah, we'd love to launch that nationally, but there is not enough of this ingredient in the world to handle a national
launch.
How crazy
is that?
Which is how big in scope a lot of
things. I'm sure the lobsters of the world just breathe the sigh of relief.
Yeah, I don't think there's enough lobsters in the world to do it nationally yet, but we'll see what we could do.
So. Well, people are loving this. 312-981-7200 for your questions. These are the mysterious questions. I've wondered some of these myself. And let's see, we have a lot of them. There's still a lot of interest in here. So someone had said from the 815 text, and I think they should make the Big Mac patty wider. I think it's pretty wide, but as far as changing the dimensions of any of the items, I'm assuming that would be a big challenge too, right?
It is a big challenge. However, in certain regions, we are testing out a Junior Mac and a Grand Mac. So a Junior Mac is actually a single patty Big Mac with your, the normal accompaniments. We'll have the traditional Big Mac, and then we have the Grand Mac, which is actually a wider patty, bigger bun, more meat. So you can have your choice there of if you want a monster, if you want a little one, or if you want traditional.
That solves it right there. If you want the big, you just go with the Grand Mac.
Yeah.
So, Tim from Plainfield, this is something I've wondered for a long time. 630, bring back the McDLT. And for those who don't remember, the hot side stayed hot and the cold side stayed cold. I was at a time when I was able to, when I was maybe a younger adult, I was a daily communicant at the church of the McDLT. And that so I would probably buy one. Any thoughts? You hear that kind of feedback?
Everyone has their opinion on what they want and what they want removed and their experiences. Through that franchise model we were talking about before, the regions can choose if they want the McDLT back or not. It also has to do with making sure those ingredients are available. So if there's fresh produce that we know we're going to sell a lot of, and if it's off-season, that might be very difficult to execute to the quality that the chefs and everybody want. Everyone, even as soon as I started at McDonald's, my family, my friends, and everyone was like, oh, you should, when's the McRib coming? Or, bring this back and all that stuff. And I said, I can slightly influence, but the regions will choose.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And nothing happens in a vacuum. So, of course, one thing, like you said, the lobster. There's just not enough lobsters or lettuce or other things. The we've got a call from the 630, wanted to know about a potential cheese sauce for the fries. You know, cheese fries are pretty popular. McDonald's, I don't think, has ever done that. Is there like a stock cheese sauce, maybe in addition to the sweet and sour and the honey mustard, McCheese?
We have tested things with cheese sauce. I don't think there's any plans right now for cheese sauce. However, on the West Coast, we are playing around with what's called Gilroy garlic fries. So Gilroy, California, is a large grow of garlic. So we take our gold standard French fries, we take them in a metal bowl and toss them with olive oil, fresh garlic, Parmesan, and they are outstanding. They actually sold out in a couple weeks. They got replenished, and maybe you'll see that around
other places. See, that's huge out in Northern California, the garlic and the Gilroy garlic festival. So it's cool to see McDonald's, and that's part of, I guess, the benefit of a franchise. Or if you're a family doing, you know, the family truckster vacation, it is one of the upsides of a franchise is that there is a consistent standard product that you know, love,
Absolutely.
And can trust. But it is nice on occasion to see some of these partnerships with those, you know, kind of important things going on in the region.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So where does the McRib come into this? Is there a timetable, a schedule, or is it just kind of when, because it makes news. You know, we talk about McRib's coming back. People are excited.
The way things are, we do a lot of limited time offers, just because of supply, demand, things like that. There is a schedule. I think that schedule is in a vault somewhere on when things are being released in certain regions. But if that's something you want, you know, maybe tweet or text or try to be vocal about what you want. One of the great things about McDonald's is that those 1-800 numbers, the emails, if you leave a comment, I get them as well. Everybody in the company can see voice messages on your experience. So if you have a positive experience, negative experience, you want something new, you know, definitely call up and let us know so that we can better support the customer.
People are loving the whole cheese fries, the lobster roll suggestions, the possibilities. So it just says the possibilities, but as you mentioned, it just says more opportunities and possibilities are available, and things are changing. It's going to open up, you know, hey, we love the breakfast, let's do this too. So someone had just said when they're looking forward to the day when they can get a Big Mac at 8 a.m.
Ooh, that may or may not be in the works. I cannot confirm or deny, but I think that is a fantastic idea because some people need burgers for breakfast. I don't see why you can't have a Big Mac for breakfast.
This is an interesting one from the 847, and McDonald's has been around, and you call it fast food, but when you bring in the elevated chef situations and just all of the research, development, the thought process, when you're rolling something out that is going to have an impact on millions and millions of people around the world, right? You can't just, it's not as easy as if you just got a corner burger stand. You're like, let's just try this for the
put
week.
Put this on the menu for a day.
If it doesn't work. And one of the texters had texted in about they're allergic to soy and corn. And I know that that's probably maybe 20 years ago wasn't even in the thought process of making stuff. But all of those concerns of what people may have as far as allergies or conditions, you guys consider that as well, right?
Absolutely. It is very important. Almost one of the most important things is food safety for our guests. As we know in the media, there's always issues with our food supply, but we at McDonald's make sure that we put 110% into making sure that the food is quality, it's safe, and healthy for our people.
It is considered fast food, but people, their love affair with McDonald's, one of the most all-American things on the food side that we have in the country, is that people just expect, they hold McDonald's to a higher standard. So then you guys still have to come in with, you know, sorbet, you know, fruit plates and, you know, yogurt and all sorts of healthy choices, even though you can't maybe necessarily sit back and just say, like, hey, this is what we do, this is what we do well. You're always trying to expand the opportunities on the customer base, right, to bring in, you know, more people into the tent and give them more things that they want. So we're going to talk a little bit about the history of McDonald's. Shane during the break had said that there should be, if there isn't, a McDonald's museum, some of the giveaways, some of the prizes and all that. Excited to have Chef Mike Harris in. He's the manager of culinary innovation for McDonald's in studio. 312-981-7200. We'll get to more of your calls and a lot of these texts on the menu items. It's Dane in for Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. WGN All-State Showcase Studio in for Bill and Wendy. It's Dane Neal until 3 p.m. talking about America. iconic foods, iconic places in America. Of course, you could share what it is that you're doing today. A lot of people are going to be outside, maybe barbecuing, maybe grilling. 312-981-7200. You can share your thoughts on that. And in studio, we got Chef Mike Harris, who is also, you're a KCBS, Kansas City Barbecue Society. You're a certified judge.
I sure am. I compete and I judge.
Do you ever able to judge yourself while you're competing? Because that would be like the best deal.
So I actually took the judges class to know what they're looking for when I'm competing. It's kind of a new venture. I still have yet to win, you know, the big grand prize, but slowly but surely I'm trying to get better and better every time we do it. But love barbecue.
Well, cool. We'll talk a little bit about what you're going to be doing in the backyard and do on a regular basis here before we spring you. But people are texting in and calling in 312-981-7200 with their thoughts on some of the cool menu items, questions they've always wanted to know about McDonald's. People are asking about turkey. You know, if you ever considered having like turkey burgers or turkey. I don't know that turkey's all that. I mean, it's great for Thanksgiving. Trust me, I love Thanksgiving. But, you know, like turkey sausage, is that something that you guys have thought about?
Yeah, we played around, especially with turkey breakfast sausage, chicken breakfast sausage, a way to lower some calories on some of our breakfast items. What I will say, though, is that when McDonald's does get a healthy menu item out there, I recommend buying it. We are definitely driven by our consumer, so if more people start buying our fruit and yogurt parfaits, our egg white delights, we're going to try to put more healthy things on the menu. So if that's important to you, just keep on keeping on.
And I think there is a good percentage of Americans that don't want McDonald's to get too distracted by, let's try to be all things to all people. You do want to have it so that, you know, people can have some healthier choices in there. There's no reason not to. And as a company with that kind of bandwidth, you can do that. But like, do what it is that you do. And do it well, but you have, you've kind of kept up on some of these trends and some of the hot things that are going on, no pun intended. So the coffee situation, someone had texted in about the hazelnut coffee has been discontinued, but you guys are, you know, as coffee becomes a craze that people are really being more specific instead of just, hey, I'll have a cup of coffee. They're like, well, what kind is it? You know,
right,
and,
definitely.
And you guys are there with that too. And you've got some, like elevated signature chef menu items, which are kind of a little bit more on the high end as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so our McCafe line is fantastic. It's unbelievable coffee. So we have plenty of customers who come through the drive-thru and need a cup of black coffee quick. But if you want, you know, an iced mocha beverage of some kind or a, you know, anything with some flavors and artisan syrups and things like that, we can do that every day. Iced coffees are huge. We do a lot of business with that. And then our signature crafted line where you were talking about more upscale, higher-end items. We're looking to have a permanent place to do those high-end burgers. So we're testing out a pico guacamole burger where it's 100% Haas avocado. We're doing a maple bacon Dijon burger where we're using real maple sugar on our bacon to give it a pretty awesome flavor. And then the big one, which is you might have heard in the news, is our signature sriracha sandwich, which is actually a play on our Big Mac sauce and adding sriracha to it. So we're testing that out, which seems to be a big hit, and hopefully we'll get that across some other menu items in the future.
With a company as big, and everybody has grown up, you know, having McDonald's and begging their parents to take them there over the course of their childhood, but at that big, touching so many different people, you get people that are excited about some of the items, and then probably some, it's almost like baseball, right? Some purists out there that don't want you messing with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, do you get that kind of feedback?
I get it all the time. So there's, like I was saying before, there's people who just, I want this back. I want my one special menu item that you no longer have. Since you got rid of it, I'm upset. I say, you know, I'm very sorry. We have a full menu of delightful treats for you.
But maybe you'll find something else that'll please you.
Yeah, try some of the other things. But, yeah, there are loyalists out there. I would love to see some McDonald's tattoos walk by. If you have any, just come by the studio so I could see it if it's a real thing. But I haven't got my McDonald's tattoo yet, but I'm thinking about it.
What does that get you? Does that get you free fries or something for life?
I think it gets you street cred. If you went into McDonald's and flashed that, you might get something. Who knows?
But the authorities called.
So you know, we're definitely looking to have a permanent place for upscale menu items as well. So we want not only those consumers who need a 90-second quick meal through the drive-thru, we want people to come in, and we're testing out a platform where you get a table number, the food is delivered to your table, it's fresh off the grill, it's you know, cooks in the back making it fresh just for you. So we're trying to engage customers in that way as well.
The chicken wrap. Someone wants to bring back the chicken wrap.
Bring back the chicken wraps. The wraps were another difficult item with all that produce and everything on there. But, you know, it's in our vault of things that will pop in and pop out in certain restaurants in certain regions. So
some of these are just kind of personal preferences or personal questions. And, of course, that was from the 708. Thanks so much. This one may make complete sense. Maybe, you know, it's just a limited period of time, but the 262 says McDonald's known for its French fries, and it is. Mm-hmm. Why not introduce all day French fries?
Ooh, that
right?
Could be,
that seems that, ex- could work. That actually is sensible.
I think that would be a great idea. I'll talk to Ronald and see if we can execute that. We'll see what we can do.
Well, Ronald's doing a lot of packing as we speak. It was big news. The headquarters out there in Oak Brook, you know, has been there for so long. More of a campus style, really windy roads and, you know, trees and statues and spread out. And now you guys are moving to, and it's official, you're actually doing moving it to the old Harpo Studios. Mm-hmm. What's the thought process? This, of course, is the is it the global headquarters?
Yes.
You know, here in Chicago? Okay,
yep.
So this is McDonald's kind of main, you know, brain center for everything that they do around the world. Number one, if you're going to move, why move just a short, you know, it's not that far. It's not mm-hmm. like you're moving to Seattle or something like that. So why make the move, and why do you think the city was important?
So our CEO's initiative is to be a modern, progressive burger restaurant. In order to do that, you know, there was some old McDonald's mentality that we don't want anything to change. We want to keep it the way it is. So this allows us to build a brand new state-of-the-art facility. One of the cool things for me is that I'm part of the team that's going to help design the kitchens that are in this building. So this is going to be our permanent home for many, many years, and I get to actually give some input on how it's going to be designed and flowed and everything like that. But it's just proving the fact that McDonald's is changing for the better to become more modern, to listen to the customers. And I think they also want to acquire new talent for McDonald's. So being in Chicago, the best city in the world,
absolutely,
obviously, you know, we'll be closer to where all this fun action is happening. And we could get some new people on the team, new fresh ideas. And
when people want to communicate with you, that's, you know, not in the complaint department or maybe even in the food suggestion department, but just in general through social media. I mean, you're out there. You do, you said, the KCBS, and, of course, you're participating in the Culinary Fight Club events. Is
oh,
there?
Yeah.
What's your social media for people to catch up with all your adventures?
So I'm on, I think, all the assorted social media. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, MySpace. I think I still have one of those.
Really?
What is that? Pinterest? I think I'm doing that. One of the other cool things is that I was actually talking with our marketing media team that they're actually going to allow the chefs to maybe take over some of McDonald's media for a day and show what goes behind the scenes, take some pictures of the food we're working on and do all that fun stuff. So I am a millennial. I am 32, so I do enjoy the social media. So just look up my name, Mike Harris.
And, see, that's cool, though, yeah, because it takes it out. And again, McDonald's has this reputation, and they've been doing so many things for so long, so well. But to really show that instead of the whole, which may have been the desirable thing, the assembly line mm-hmm. situation back in the day, now to show that there are chefs with a hand in things, and there's some real thought
absolutely.
Process behind
we,
the
we
food.
We cut things with knives. We have saute pans. We work with fire, you know, all that fun stuff. I went to Johnson & Wales in Providence, which is a pretty darn good culinary
nice.
School. We got CIA chefs. We got Cooking Hospitality Institute here in Chicago. Chefs from all over the place to help us out.
So, Mike, give the website out for McDonald's or any kind of social media for people to be able to check out the site with any announcements or anything's going on with the corporation.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, McDonald's.com. You got the Twitter handle at McDonald's. You've got their Pinterest. You've got their Instagram. Just if you don't know how to find McDonald's on any of those sites, you're probably using it wrong. So.
You have other problems. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for being in the studio. Thanks for being here in WGN and sharing some of the mysteries. People loved being able to ask some questions about something that they
pleasure.
Have known for so long but don't know necessarily everything about. So Mike Harris, Manager of Culinary Innovation for McDonald's, thanks for being in WGN. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have more. It's Staying In for Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. Seven. 720 WGN. It's Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue in Chicago in summertime when people get out and about, at least in the Chicagoland area, looking for the greatest things at the farmers markets. One of the things on everybody's lips and one of the things that everyone is looking for is the blueberry. People don't necessarily know that so many of the blueberries, I don't know if it's maybe 30, 40% of the world's blueberries come from Southwest Michigan, but there is a council that handles all of the blueberry efforts for the whole country. And we are coming up on the 100th anniversary. On the line with us now, he is the president of the North American Blueberry Council, the one and only Bob Carini. Bob, welcome to WGN.
Well, thank you, Dane.
So, Bob, this is exciting stuff. As a guy who works in the industry, it's one thing to be, you know, have that pressure, that responsibility, but the excitement to be the president of the council for the entire North America. But 100 years, right? We don't see this very often.
Yeah, we're really excited about this, and we're proud of what we do and proud of our heritage, and this is kind of exciting for us because it's the 100th year of commercial production of the high bush blueberry. It all started in New Jersey and quickly moved to Michigan, but in New Jersey there was a lady by the name of Elizabeth White whose family grew cranberries, but she was really interested in the blueberry bushes that were growing around their cranberry bogs and had people go out and actually paid them, but they had to tell her where they found the largest berries and so forth and brought them in and domesticated them. And that created our industry, and it's been 100 years since then, and we're excited to celebrate it.
Now, the questions that you get as somebody that is in the middle of all of it, you know, I know doing some of the things that we do for blueberries, you know, in the area, people are always, as surprising as it is, it's kind of a mystery. You know, how do they grow? What do they grow on? The questions that you get as far as how blueberries work from an agricultural standpoint, what do you hear?
I've heard everything. You know, that they grow underground, are they on trees, and it's always interesting to be having grown up in the industry that people aren't aware, that they grow on bushes, and the bushes can be up to maybe 7 feet tall, and we plant them in rows so they're easily harvested, and it's a very healthy product. For the last few years, we've gotten a lot of emphasis from the health benefits of blueberries. And we always knew they were healthy but didn't know why. But now we know why, and they're one of the healthiest fruits that you can eat.
Yeah, it's great to have the scientific side kind of catch up and validate some of those things, especially at a time when people are more in tune, you know, to all of those things. And it is kind of interesting to think about. You think about, you know, apples or peaches or whatever is out there, dates, you know, and they've been around since the beginning of time. But as far as blueberries, you know, it took an effort 100 years ago to kind of get them to the point where you could harvest them and have them ready for people to enjoy. I describe it when people ask me, I describe, well, have you ever seen, you know, Napa Valley? Or it's kind of a vineyard setting is the way that I would describe it.
It almost is, yeah. It does look like that. And it's really beautiful. I guess we don't appreciate it as much as we should. We see it every day. But if you were just to come in and look at it, it'd be like you'd be amazed at the beauty of where they are grown. And one of the nice things, we're real close to Lake Michigan. Most of the blueberry production is within a few miles of Lake Michigan here. And so you have the benefit of being able to go to the beach and go pick some fresh blueberries at the same time. So,
well, the council is based in California. Of course, you're based, as so many great growers are, right there in Michigan. You mentioned the origins in New Jersey. So it seems as though it's a national thing. But one of the interesting things about blueberries is that you really can't grow them very many places. You really do need to have those perfect conditions.
They are pretty specific in the type of soil that they require and also the different climate that they require. And they have adapted some now that they grow in Florida, and they are producing in 38 different states, but we like to say ours are the best. I'll probably get in trouble for saying that, but the best ones, I think, do grow in a natural area that they are accustomed to.
Of course, Bob, you're supportive of all the blueberries, and all blueberries are good for you, but, you know, it's good to have some pride in the area that you are and doing so much with them. And as you mentioned, you grew up in it, but now, because of all of the health properties and just in this, maybe the smoothie craze too, like I'm sure, Bob, you are a much more popular guy than you've ever been before.
Yeah, we have people that come out to the farm and pick that have come out for many years, and it's always nice to see the same people year after year, and I get stopped and they say, hey, have you heard the latest news about how healthy blueberries are for you? And most of it, some of it I haven't heard, and it's always good to be a popular person.
Blueberries are very popular in the Chicagoland area, and we're close. I don't want to say we take them for granted, too, but there are certain areas of the country that probably don't see them as often, and certainly not the ones that would be maybe the best-tasting ones. And I agree with you. Michigan has got some amazing tasting blueberries, but it's always good to enjoy them year-round. People do that with the frozen blueberries. You know, we're involved in some of that. And then also, too, is when you can build events all around it, and you have some events that are going on and coming up related to the blueberry and the 100th anniversary that you're excited about as well.
We do locally here in Michigan. There's a couple of events. There's one that's held in South Haven every year. It's the National Blueberry Festival, and this year it's going to be from August 11th through the 14th, and that's in South Haven, Michigan. And then there's one in Imlay City. They have a blueberry festival which runs from July 22 through the 23rd. And there might be other various events going on also. There's a website that would have the festivals and also a searchable database for UPIC farms.
Oh, that would be great.
It's called littlebluedynamos.com.
Littlebluedynamos.com.
Correct, yep. And they also have a bunch of stuff up there in celebration of the 100th anniversary of 100 fun activities to do this summer, and including recipes and a lot more.
Yep, there's so many recipes out there. I remember when people would ask me, like, well, what am I going to do with these blueberries? Because it was only, people were just thinking as far as, you know, pancakes or muffins and how many could they possibly eat. And now with the smoothie craze, and now with so many different celebrity chefs, you know, and TV personalities like Allison Sweeney, everybody getting in, the blueberry is not only thought of as a very nutritious thing, but it's one of the hottest fruits out there.
Oh, Dane, I've been so surprised in some of the different things that I've tried blueberries in that I kind of cringed at first, and then once I tried it, it was like, wow, that is really good. Everything from in salads and different sauces for the savory end of, like, putting on meats and so forth. It's amazing. They are very versatile. And it's one of the few fruits that you don't really have to spend a lot of time preparing. You don't have to peel it, or there's no pit or anything like that. It's just use it, and it's so very convenient.
Oh, it's awesome. It is one, in my personal opinion, it is the perfect fruit when you add in the health properties as one of America's great superfoods. It is second to none. I'm a big fan of the blueberries, as, of course, you are and so many people who have been for about 100 years. It's Bob Carini. He's the president of the North American Blueberry Council. And, Bob, one more time with that website before we let you go.
It was littlebluedynamos.com.
Bob, thanks so much for what you do, carrying the torch and being that great ambassador for the blueberry, and thanks so much for being on WGN today.
Well, thank you for having me, and I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
You know that people are enjoying a bunch of blueberries in their backyard as well. You know, food has just become it's always been an important thing. Obviously, we all need it to live. But just so many more cool things going on, with whether it's initiatives, whether it's just awareness, whether it's some of the events going on. And we still, we've got Mike Harris in studio with us. He's the manager for culinary innovation for McDonald's. But also, it doesn't define him. He's also, you're involved with Culinary Fight Club. And I know I've been a judge at a number of those events. In Chicago, I think I might have even judged one down in Florida for the World Food Championships. I know that they're tied in with that. And for Rib Fest,
oh, yeah,
we did one where I was one of the judges along with Ina Pinckney and the chef over there at Zed 451. And you were there front and center doing a little bit of the entertaining side of food.
I just had to be the MC and, you know, talk nonsense in the microphone and talk about bacon. You were fortunate enough to be a judge on a bacon battle during
Ribfest. I wasn't fortunate enough. Yeah, the artichoke and the rutabaga competitions, I was busy.
You were busy. But the bacon ones, heck yeah, you showed up. It was a lot of fun. So these culinary fight clubs, it's basically if you wanted to see a culinary competition like you'd see on TV live, where there's mystery ingredients, they have to run, grab ingredients. These things are so much fun. If you go to culinaryfightclub.com, you could see a whole list of schedule of different events. They usually have one once a month, and I know they're branching out into other cities now. So it is a growing, cool thing to do. They're usually, I think, on Mondays, or right now they're on Mondays, but they'll do a chili one, they'll do a burger one, they'll do a bacon. There's always a theme. But definitely go out and see some stuff live.
Yeah, and it's tied into some events that people know and love and are participating in anyway, whether it is Ribfest or World Food Championships.
Definitely.
I think it's culinaryfightclub.com is the website for that. You can get information on all the different events. And, of course, see Mike out there with some of those as well. WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio, in for Bill and Wendy on the 4th of July until 3 p.m. today. And people are out on the streets enjoying the 4th of July. You wonder, some of these people, you think they would be home in their backyard enjoying maybe grilling something, maybe lighting some fireworks.
Yeah, they might be pre-gaming right now. They're ready to get some lunch before the festivities this evening. Who knows?
You never know. That Chef Mike Harris from McDonald's, manager of culinary innovation. I know that people in the surrounding areas of Kenosha, Wisconsin, are all in their backyard or in their kitchens making some amazing things from produce and exciting items that they got at what I think is one of the best farmers markets. Almost not really accurate to call it a farmers market because it is so many more things than that. They've got a great craft section, great hot foods available right there, so you can go there and have you can have lunch, you know, during it. But of course, you can get all the things that you need, take it home with you for you and your family. On the line with us is the guy who's got his hand on the pulse of so much of it, as the president of the Kenosha Harbor Market, Ray Forgiani. Ray, welcome to WGN.
Good afternoon and happy 4th of July.
So what is it that you do? What do you do after another successful week? And I was up there with you on Saturday, and you got to see, not only you and I were up there, but, geez, I don't know, how many thousands of people were up there as well for a beautiful day at the market?
We estimated at 14,000 people Saturday.
Wow. So 14,000 people, and Chicagoland has a number of great markets in the suburbs and the city, some with great histories. I don't know that any of them are quite as big as what it is that that we have in Kenosha with the Harbor Market. But give the listeners of WGN a little insight into the amount of space there and the kind of things that are going on with the vendors.
Well, we've got somewhere, it depends on the week, certainly in the beginning of the season when the produce isn't in, produce is now coming in at a really rapid rate. We vary anywhere from about 110 to, we're going to estimate, we're going to probably get 160 vendors this summer. That results in something like 170 tents. So it's spread out over, four blocks and a plaza.
That's awesome.
So we're in the east of the downtown, in what's called Harbor Park. We're adjacent to two museums, the public, Kenosha Public Museum, Civil War Museum. It's also, right between the Harbor Channel and a marina. So it's a delightful space, but we run two blocks north and south on 2nd Avenue along a set of plazas, and then two blocks east and west on 56th Street, which runs right through the downtown. And it's a farmer's market, but it's also a mixed market. We do have other things than just produce and meat. It's pretty festive, to say the very least.
Yeah.
But three venues of music each week, sometimes four. And then we occasionally do some surprise things like flash mobs and tap dancing.
even like Ray, and I've got to tell, for the listeners who have not been to it before, it is not that far from Chicagoland. It is maybe 50 minutes, depending, maybe an hour, depending on where the people are coming from in the Chicagoland area. But it is worth every bit of the trip, and I run into people all the time that have made that trip up there from Chicago. What is really cool about it, and some of the Chicago connections that we have with, is Lindsay, who's the producer for Lou Man Fernini's Mr. Fix-It Show, is from Kenosha, and she talks about the area on a regular basis. And then one of our greatest chefs, not only here in Chicago but around the country, Tony Montuano, is, you know, whenever I run into him, which is a pretty regular basis, whether it's here, whether it's, you know, at a food event around the country, we invariably bring up and talk about the Kenosha Harbor Market. So for people to be able to get up there and see it, and maybe if they think they have been to Kenosha before and they know what it is, this is really one of the more beautiful places on the lakefront, I think probably anywhere along the lakefront of Lake Michigan. So if you think you've been to Kenosha, you haven't seen it till you see the market.
It's a great place. Thank you.
So for people who want to come up and stop by, you mentioned a mixed market. There is a lot of certainly the produce that's there, the fruit, the vegetables, the ready-made foods that are there, the entertainment. Where is there a website where people can kind of see what's going on? And then it's every Saturday. People should know that, right, from 9 till 2.
9 until 2 every Saturday, 56th Street and 2nd Avenue. 56th Street and 2nd Avenue. Come in from Chicago, get off at State Highway 158. Go due east until you get to the harbor and make one right turn, one left turn, and you'll see it. It runs from 9 a.m. in the morning until 2 p.m. in the afternoon. And given the size of the crowd and the number of vendors we attract, one of the things that happens is we get a really wide variety of produce, very fresh, very organic or natural, and the price points are sometimes just unbelievable. I've had vendors say that in order to stay competitive, we've got the lowest price point between, including Chicago and Milwaukee.
Wow. And so before we let you go, is there a website where people can get all that information or social media?
Sorry about that. You can find us on Facebook as well as our website, which is www.KenoshaHarborMarket.com. KenoshaHarborMarket.com.
He is the president of the Kenosha Harbor Market, the one and only Ray Forgione. Ray, thanks so much for taking time out of your 4th of July. Happy 4th of July, and thanks for being on WGN today.
Have a great Independence Day. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
And it is 13 minutes after 2 o'clock right now. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have the one and only Rohini Day with us. She of Vermilion, one of Chicagoland's most beautiful people, award-winning restaurateur, and part of the James Beard Foundation. So we're going to take a quick break. It's Dane in for Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN.
Now I'm staring down.
2 years ago, there was a furor because Time came out with a magazine called The Gods of Food, and there was not a single woman on it. So what we are trying to do with this brand, with the James Beard Foundation, is push women to own a much larger piece of the puzzle.
The shadows scream my name.
Hi, this is Rohini Day for the James Beard Foundation, and you're listening to Dane on WGN.
But I'm just an ordinary human.
720 WGN, it's Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue in Chicago, and on the line, wow, I mean, the description, the bio, it is a bio of 10 people. She is a triathlete, she is a mountain climber, she has got a PhD in economics, she is also voted one of Chicago's 50 most beautiful Chicagoans and a groundbreaking restaurateur. Big honor to have the one and only Rohini Day on the line. Ms. Rohini, welcome to the show.
Dane, a pleasure. Thank you.
You know what? It's one of those things. You look at your career and your history, and it spans a bunch of different things, of course, you know, on the business side, which is so important. But excited to talk about what you're doing for women on the business side with this new grant with the James Beard Foundation.
So are we. We're very enthused about not only where we are now, but how it's grown over the last 3 years. Would you like me to walk you through it a little bit?
Well, the 2012 is when you started it, right? And this is the 2016, and the honorees have been announced. It's the James Beard Foundation Women in Culinary Leadership Grant and Scholarship. But yes, walk Beth and I through not only, you know, what it is and how it helps, but why you guys decided to start it in the first place.
Yeah. So, you know, as you mentioned, I've had a couple of careers before going into this glamorous and yet grueling business. And I'm no stranger to the glass ceiling, the proverbial glass ceiling, whether it's, you know, at the multinational level at the World Bank or working with McKinsey or our corporate clients. And yet, after 10 years of being in restaurants, it stunned me how few women were leading executive chefs.
Yeah.
Or own their own businesses, or were restaurateurs of magnate. Where were the Rich Melmans or the Danny Meyer equivalent women?
And can I ask you really quick, tell us a little bit about, you know, your experience as a restaurateur. It's hard. It's tough. And do you think that that's maybe one of the reasons? I mean, it's a very grueling, many, many hours standing on your feet, very physical industry. Do you think that has something to do with it?
Bet you've hit the nail on the head, but that's the physical side of it. But there's also the economic side of it. It's a highly competitive industry. Mm-hmm. It's high capital. So it's not like a dot-com where you sell online. You really have to put up all your money up front. And if you don't have a buffer and if you don't hit it well,
right,
then you could go bust within 6 months. And that's what 90% of restaurants do. So everybody comes in starry-eyed, but not everyone has the financial savvy or the fundraising ability or the grit to stick out the business side of it.
Yeah, and do you think that it has to do with sort of women in business and their risk aversion? I mean, is there something there, or is it just plain that they may not have, you know, there's not the abundance of women with the economic backing to handle it?
All amazing questions. 2 years ago, there was a furor because Time came out with a magazine called The Gods of Food, mm-hmm. and there was not a single woman on it. Mm-hmm. And that created a ruckus in the industry. I wrote an op-ed in Crane's Business around this, and the points you mentioned were front and center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it comes to culinary schools, leading ones, women are at 50% or higher when it comes to enrollment and graduation. And then in the field, they drop out like flies. So where is this happening and why? And I think the point that you spoke about financial literacy is a big one. The reality is in the field, women tend to dominate the softer side of restaurants, areas like the cold station, pastry. So what we are trying to do with this grant, the James Beard Foundation, is push women to own a much larger piece of the puzzle. So if it's the kitchen, then you've got to learn how to own many different sections. And beyond that, get savvy around things like food costs, labor costs, training, sourcing, purchasing. Because unless you can lead all of those elements, speak the language of bankers, speak the language of investors, speak the language of your managers, you'll be relegated to the softer side. Particularly for the front of the house.
Well, Rohini, it is one of those businesses, and you mentioned, of course, the high failure rate, but it is one of those businesses that people, and you said the word starry-eyed, but when they're passionate about it, they get into it, they'll put all of it into it, but rarely do you have that combination of somebody that loves food, maybe is an artist on the chef side, but also possesses abilities on the business side as well. And so, and you have people who are successful business people in other walks of life and then decide they want to get into the restaurant business, and even though they've had success in business, they fail at the restaurant side. So what kind of issues are you guys tackling? And then what kind of things are the people that win these scholarships, what kind of support are you giving them? Is it just monetary support, or are you giving them educational and mentoring support?
So these are all women who have had at least 2 to 3 years of hospitality or culinary experience. They've invested in their careers. They've graduated from leading entities and are vested in making a career of this. They're going to be investing 6 months to 1 year of their time in these programs. And the program is essentially being paired with a mentor, a leading restaurateur. We're fortunate in Chicago to have four. We have the Boca Group, Lettuce and Tenure Group, Vermilion, of course, and Paul Jones this year. We had the One-Off Group last year. Similarly, across the country, leading restaurateurs who take these women into their organization and train them, expedited in different facets. It could be events business. It could be launching a new restaurant. It could be actual kitchen leadership skills. So there's a whole gamut depending on the interest of these women. There's only so much you can learn in 6 months to 1 year. But to give you an example, my candidate last year, who had been purely in baking, across 1 year she trained every station at Vermilion, from, you know, saute to grill to cold station, tandoor. And our cuisine is Indian and Latin. And she, in 1 year, learned everything about being an executive chef. And she's now our sous chef. So we also supplemented her training with WBDC, Women's Business Development Corporation courses. So one-on-one on financial literacy, how to read a P&L, a balance sheet, a profit and loss statement, how to do make a business plan, how to do invested capital, basics of marketing. Is she going to be the business person or the whiz behind her restaurant? Should she open one, which is her plan? Probably not. She's probably outsourced that element of it. But she does need to know, and so do all these other women, the basics of how to read a P&L. What are the numbers? How do they add up? Maybe you won't be running it. Maybe you'll hire help, but you can't be ignorant.
Rohini, that is such a good point. Recently in the news, there's been a lot about financial fluency for women and about, you know, the disparity in pay for women to men as far as, you know, equal pay is concerned. I've been doing a lot of reading actually about it. And one of the things is financial fluency is a big issue for women. It's just based on how we're raised and our culture and giving women that information. And it sounds to me like you're working on kind of getting to the heart of that with this program.
Yes, so the unfortunately the financial side of it is external, but there are so many of these great WBDCs around the country, so we pair up our women with that. But you know, the learning by doing in these fantastic restaurateurs' kitchens, front of the house, floors, the mentorship that they pick up, they're on monthly calls with us at the James Beard Foundation, with the president of the James Beard Foundation, Susan Angaro, me, Shelley, who administrates the program. We look at their development trajectory, ask them, well, why are you not learning this? What more could you be doing? How can you be pushing yourself for the entire 6 months to 12 months? And they learn from their cohorts. So this year we have 21 women who are being supported. And by supported, I mean each of these restaurateurs has kicked in 15 to 30,000 to ensure that these women have their living expenses apart from taking them in. James Beard Foundation is mentoring them, and they'll have this network and cohort for life, you know?
Wow.
So it is very, very career and aspiration changing.
I think just sharing the story and raising awareness about what you're doing and, of course, some of the issues that are being addressed, I think is going to be, I think it's going to have its impact as well. But for those people, the 21, how do, and for future awards in future years, like how do the people get nominated? How do they enter to be considered? How does it work?
So this is run entirely by the James Beard Foundation. We do it every year around fall, October, November. They put out a call for applications, and we leverage all our networks. So it's not just culinary groups, but entrepreneurial groups, others. We put it out there, and so the best thing that women, aspiring women, can do is follow very closely the applications on the James Beard website. It takes a month or two to screen them, to pair them with mentors. The mentors then bring them in for a face-to-face interview or tasting if they're a chef or a trial. It's a pretty rigorous thing. So last year we had 7 positions, 65 women applied, and it's a complicated package. Application, essay, referrals, the gamut to show that you're really committed to this. And then the lucky ones get it, and we stay in touch with the rest and hope they'll circle back the following year.
And all that information and everything, and of course, the great works that happen over the James Beard Foundation and Susan Angaro, and of course, you guys, as well as at jamesbeard.org. I want to thank you so much for being a part of it and adding in what it is that you can do and some of your expertise on the business side and building it in to what can be so helpful on the restauranting side as well. But you look at all the different worlds that you live in. You know, you've got the fashion world, the fitness world, you know, the financial world, and then you chose and are passionate about the restaurant world. So, Rohini, like, what is it about owning a restaurant? 90% fail, it seems like, and you described it as grueling, both of you guys. What is it about restauranting that that drew you in and kept you there?
So in my case, Dane, I am a zealous ambassador of Indian cuisine. You know, I had been here for 10 years. I was at McKinsey dining out on an all-expense account, and the needle hadn't moved from the curry in a hurry genre. And food was booming. Japanese was booming. Korean had not yet come into its own. Obviously, French, Italian, and Spanish have always been the bedrocks of American and Nouveau American. So I wanted to put my money where my mouth is and do justice to Indian in the space where all food is escalating. And so this is Vermilion in both New York and Chicago is Indian and Latin. So think of a melding of Portuguese or Brazilian or Argentinian. And I can wax on eloquent about why the two. It's fun. It's provocative. It's something that has huge highs when it does work. But I've got to say, working with the James Beard Foundation, and I'm also a trustee there, bringing them to Chicago, their awards, and spearheading the Women in Culinary Leadership Program with Susan has been one of the most gratifying aspects of being in this industry.
It's great work to be able, and it's exciting work too, and you're making a big impact and you're doing it at the highest level. So it's got to be exciting, but also just the way that it's impacting so many people in the industry now, and of course those that will come after you. So thanks so much for everything that you're doing. Thanks for being on the show. And for those people who want to catch up with you and all the different things that you're doing social media wise, how can people keep track of Rohini Day?
At Rohini Vermilion is my Twitter, and find me at Vermilion. Come dine with me.
Oh. Love that.
JamesBeard.org for all the information about the grant for the Women in Culinary Leadership Grant and scholarship. Amazing stuff you guys are doing, not only in the restauranting side, but also with the foundation. And again, thanks so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. And again, thank you for sharing this at Chicago.
WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio, in for Bill and Wendy until 3 p.m. We've got 20 or so minutes left, and a lot of great summer activities, especially a beautiful day like this, a holiday, people in their backyard, barbecuing, sharing some beverages with their family. But one of the other things that people love to do in the summer, and the movie companies know it as well because they position some of their biggest films, some of those biggest blockbusters for the summer movie season. Excited to have on the line again. This is a guy who's navigated the waters through the latest Star Wars movie, through some of the Marvel, DC franchise conflict, all that stuff. Calling us from his Hollywood headquarters, the one and only Blake Stubbs. Blake, welcome to WGN.
Thank you for having me back. Happy Independence Day.
Happy Independence Day. So, hey, there's a movie reference. I didn't know that. You're very sly the way you weave them in. But there's some summers we get there. We know there's going to be movies that they're going to promote. There's going to be big commercials with explosions, and some of them kind of fall flat. But I think there's a lot of really actually good movies out now.
There are, absolutely. In fact, this has been a pretty good year in terms of both money-making and quality of film, which is one of those things that I've talked about on WGN several times. Or sometimes, you know, just because they throw money at it and it's got a lot of spectacle doesn't mean it's very good. We've been quite lucky this year, namely, you know, movies like Zootopia, Finding Dory, Captain America Civil War. All of these have made boatloads of money and are great experiences in the theater, some for more for the family and some just for, you know, fun on a hot day when you want to go and chill out in the theater.
Hey, so Blake, you know, from a movie standpoint, we've got the one and only Jeremy Piven here, Chicago's very own.
Oh, wow.
Outside of the Allstate Showcase studio. So it fits in and dovetails with your movie segment. And
absolutely.
He's here, I'm sure, you know, cheering on the mighty Cubs, hopefully.
Yes, go Cubs.
Is Jeremy Piven a McDonald's fan? That's what I want to know.
I'm not sure. I am not sure. Maybe we can coax him into coming into the studio and talking a little movies with us. Of course, you know, once he's been identified, he's been accosted by a lot
the
of the fans.
Of people are now gathering, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so the, exciting stuff, good stuff happening here in, it's Chicago, right?
Of course, he's a local Jeremy Chicago. Jeremy Piven just walks by the window. That's fantastic.
So, Blake, when you moved out to Los Angeles, you thought you would have to do that in order to see some celebrities, but we've got some still here. Any thoughts on a move back to Chicago?
You know what? Chicago is the love of my life in terms of city. I'm hoping so someday. In fact, I'm going to be visiting Chicago probably here in the next couple of months. So I'm going to get my time in. But long term, yes, I'm very hopeful that I'll be back in the Windy City.
When it comes to making a movie that has kind of that leg up for success, whether it's making, you know, some money, I think ultimately it's a business and they want to do that. When you can go with an existing franchise that already has that pedigree and legions of fans, you know that is something that you want to do. So Finding Dory, I have heard, I know it's going to be a success. A lot of people have seen it. I know my kids have seen it down in Florida with their grandparents, but I've heard some feedback that it isn't really as good a movie or as entertaining a movie as the original.
It does, yes. I think that something that I've been trying to put it into words because I've been thinking about how Pixar does things, you know, for a long time. They're one of those great studios to study And knowing that they're a key part of the Disney machine, you know, they sort of have their own autonomy in what they get to produce. So, you know, Finding Nemo was a big success, and a lot of people that, there are actually people out there who that is their favorite Pixar film. You know, I'm more of a Wall-E kind of guy, but what I love about what they do is that they take very different, unique stories, and they pretty much made a type of story for every filmgoer. You know, Inside Out is a masterpiece, and it's probably in my top two. But, you know, Finding Nemo sort of fell in the middle for me personally. But when they said they were doing Finding Dory and revisiting it, and again, they take many years between sequels. So they don't, you know, just churn these things out. They don't just rush them out there just to make money. They try to tell good stories. And I think Dory does that. It does succeed in what its key goals are. It's just a lot of people didn't really feel the magic, you know, that was there for Finding Nemo. So is it a good continuation? Yes. Is it a better film? No. Does that make sense? I mean, it sort of falls in that.
It does make sense.
Money. People are going to enjoy it, but it's not going to really, you know, really excite people like Finding Nemo did. Because, again, you're sort of revisiting a universe rather than discovering it for the first time.
Like,
I think because Pixar doesn't rush it, they get it right. It's just you kind of know what you're getting when you sign up for it.
Well, you know, Blake, it's wonderful to be able to sit back and watch the movies. It's another thing to be able to have the opportunity to get the perspective of somebody that not only watches movies as a fan, but also in movies. And we have the one and only Jeremy Piven, Chicago's very own, in studio. Jeremy, welcome to your station. Welcome to WGN.
Oh, it's good to be home again. It's funny. I was just the creeper that was outside staring at you guys, and you invited me in. Thank you for...
It's only the coolest thing ever that just happened. So that was awesome.
I used to live around the corner. I lived on Ohio and Lakeshore Drive. So this is my neighborhood.
As you know, spend a lot of time in, I'm sure, New York and Los Angeles and on film sets around the world, but always have been this true and tireless advocate for Chicago, right? I mean, what are the kind of things you share when you say you got to get there, especially in the summer, you got to get to Chicago?
Well, I mean, you look around. I mean, it's you know, I was just talking about this. It's one of the most beautiful places on earth. You know, it's like they planned this city out really beautifully. If you look around the way the river runs through it and the Chicago skyline, it's incredible. And then the winter hits and your head explodes. But then you regroup and you realize it's okay. You're going to make it through. But that's right. What Chicago people are, the toughest people on the planet.
That's what they say, is that you kind of fall out of love with Chicago. Maybe it's like a relationship. Some doubts creep in. Maybe this isn't working out.
Right.
But then those first few spring days, like, people just are like, yeah, that's why we're here.
It's the best. And you got the Cubs doing well. It's fantastic. Apparently the Bulls have traded away all their players.
All of them?
They've got the guys, I believe, who play the buckets outside. They're going to be the starting five now.
The fifth string is going to come in this season.
I think it's the New Jersey Generals, whatever that team is.
The St. Louis Sandwiches.
That plays the Harlem Globetrotters,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
The away team.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the ones that are doing that. So with the Cubs being as good as they are, and we, you know, people who come from here and then go on to amazing success all around the country, you know, the Cubs are one of those touchstones. And so are you talking with some of your other friends in the business, like, hey, this, I mean, you don't want to jinx it, but I think they're unjinxable. They're just permanently sort of jinxed. This could be the year.
Yeah, I don't think at this point you could, because last year, I mean, they were doing documentaries, they were taking victory laps, and it was, you know, everyone was so excited before it all went down. So, why not this year, you know? I think it all could happen. I think last year they got prepped, they almost had it all, and this could be the year they lock it down. I'm going to be there tomorrow. I'm probably going to butcher the seventh inning stretch.
Nice.
I could throw it into the stands. I could throw it into the dirt. We don't know. Anything's possible.
Well, based off of Harry Carey's interpretation of the seventh inning, I think your voice is going to be just fine.
Yes, indeed.
Fine.
Well, God bless Harry Carey.
Absolutely.
And Jack Brickhouse, for the love of God.
Now, absolutely. Do you do, like, when you get a gig like that and you've got to do the seventh inning stretch, people understand that maybe you're not, a professional singer. I think it's all just about being festive and in the moment. Mm-hmm. But for the pitch itself, because it's going to be on SportsCenter, like, all the time, do you
yeah.
practice? Do you throw the ball around in the backyard a little?
I have been practicing every day, three times a day. I go into a celebrity space shuttle, and I also I practice in different.
I mean, is there a camp for that? Like,
well,
celebrity
yeah,
first pitch camp?
I do. I practice in weightless atmospheres in batting parks. No, there is no practice. That's why you have people like Curtis Jackson, who are brilliant at what they do in their own arena, and then they get up there, and, you know, it's what, 90 feet? you know, into the catcher's glove, and you're elevated. So I think it was designed, I think the whole thing was designed to see people like me humiliate themselves.
No.
Let's be honest. You know, because no, where else, that's not what we do. I did play football at Emerson High School about 200 years ago.
Nice.
So I think most actors are frustrated athletes. I think that's just a reality.
Well, you're going to be just as many fans that you'll have there. I'm sure the and your fans of the Cubs, there's going to be a lot of people on the team that are going to love to meet you as well. And
I love to meet them, that's for sure.
So what other things? People are going to, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, like, what's in the works? Any projects, any things that you're, you know, that are going on in the world of Jeremy Piven?
We just finished up Mr. Selfridge, which is on PBS, and I played a guy named Harry Selfridge that started at Marshall Fields, and then he you know, traveled to London at the turn of the century, the last time the Cubs won the World Series, and started the, you know, the most popular store in the world, and no one really knew that he was an American that was from the Midwest. So I just finished 4 years in London, and that's kind of what I did right after I finished Entourage, and that's what I've been doing. And now I'm creating a couple projects of my own that I don't really want to talk about yet, just because I don't want to jinx it.
It's okay.
But
yeah, no, I understand.
It's okay. You can talk about it. You can jinx it. No, it's been great. I've been lucky. You know, I grew up here, and people they all want to know why so many Chicago actors become so prolific and do their thing. And I think it's because this community supports the arts. You know, if you're doing a 99 seat house here, people are going to show up. So you get to perform in front of people. And we're always just looking for audiences, you know, and I come from the Piven Theater, and you've got the Goodman, you've got Steppenwolf and all these great theaters here, and people love it, and they go and they show up.
Now, while you're here, you're going to be enjoying, you know, some of the food, and I do a lot of the food stuff here at WGN Radio. Are there any places that you can't miss or wanna hit? And I'm sure you've heard, of course, you know, that Chicago is a pretty great food town these days.
It always has been. It's been incredible. I mean, I was literally just saying that I've always wanted to play Al Capone for many reasons, but one of them is just to come here and eat everything that I want. It would be just genius to, you know, to put on 70 pounds and just have, you know, eat every deep dish pizza that was ever created.
I mean, if it's for a role, then you can do it.
Yeah.
Like you're telling your agent, no, I need to be about 2:30, man. You got to give me, you know, a different role. More scripts.
Got to pack on the pounds. There's so many places to go to. You know, go just walk down to Randolph and now, and there's just so many places down there. I love to hit Sunda around the corner.
Nice.
That's, you know, I'll probably be taking my mom
sushi,
there.
Get some sushi.
Actually, you know what?
It's like more Filipino stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of a pan-Asian. Yes, they do have a little bit of everything there.
Oh, that's awesome. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have Blake Stubbs, Blockbuster Blake, talking Hollywood movies, and we'll get a picture with Jeremy Piven for sure. But are there any of the movies that are out right now that you've seen? It could be like Finding Dory or any ones that you really like. You're like, well, I really enjoyed
it. I have not found Dory. Dory is not on my radar. I saw Deadpool. I know it's a little bit in the past now, but I was just...
What did you think of that? Because it's the Marvel, it's superheroes, but it's a little, it works a little blue, I think.
You know what? It was just such a pleasure to see a movie that where you have a superhero that had an edge to it. He was ridiculously sarcastic,
yes.
Breaking the fourth wall. Ryan Reynolds was self-deprecating. It felt like what actors love to do on set, but you're really not allowed to. You know, you beg for a free take, and then you say all that stuff, and they go, that's great. It'll never make it in the movie. And it felt like a festival of that. It felt like it was just getting in the movie, everything that they wanted to say. So it was really refreshing, and I loved it.
Yeah, we turned it on for the 9-year-old in about, like, I don't know, 30, 40 seconds, and we're like, and moving on.
So, yeah, exactly.
But to wait till he goes to sleep. But, of course, he snuck up and watched it with us as well. Now, only just a little bit before we turn it on. Well, Jerry, it's so awesome. People are going to love you at the Cubs tomorrow.
I hope so, man.
And excited for all the things that you're doing. Now, do you have, like, a Twitter or a website or anything so people can keep up with your adventures?
My Instagram used to be one word, How You Live in J. Piven. But then I just felt like, what am I doing? You know, I felt like, you know, I'm not a rapper. So it's just under Jeremy Piven is my Instagram and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. And that's been a fun journey, to experience that. And, you know, you got to kind of be on that now. It's just, it's part of the game. I don't Snapchat. I don't get it. I don't trust that you can send a video to someone, you know, and that it'll just go off and
no one will ever see it, right?
No one will ever see it. I think the joke will be on you.
I got a quick question. Would Jeremy Piven ever want to create a McDonald's menu? I'm actually a chef with McDonald's. Do you want a signature McDonald's menu item?
Now, when you say chef with McDonald's, is that like jumbo shrimp or military intelligence?
No, it is an actual trained. We have multiple chefs at McDonald's, but we could come up with a Jeremy Piven specific menu item just for
you. You're the director of culinary innovations for McDonald's.
Wow, yeah. That's crazy.
You thought I was just some radio personality, but I'm actually a trained chef.
I had no idea. You know, when I went to Emerson High School, I remember that my favorite food in the world was McNuggets, and nice. I ate enough McNuggets in high school for 11 lifetimes. So I have not been to the Golden Arches in a couple decades. I got to be honest with you.
And I'm from Schaumburg. I'm a fellow suburbanite, like you.
There you go.
Well, we're going to let him get on his way. People love what it is that you do, and of course, always Chicago's very own Jeremy Piven. So thanks so much for being here in town.
Thank you for inviting me in. I appreciate it, you guys.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we come back more Blake Stubbs on the Blockbusters. It's Dane in for Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN.